Got some time? What the heck? Why not listen to Soundcheck?
That one is uplifting. Makes me want to listen.
Yeah.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Like so many of you, I grew up watching Scooby-Doo on Saturday mornings. It didn't take long to figure out the formula for this hugely successful cartoon, even if you were a kid. Something spooky would happen. Scooby-Doo, the hapless, hungry dog, and his four teenage friends would come along and investigate. Fred, the smart one, would lead the group. The inexplicably named Velma was the plain but smart girl who helped decipher the clues. Daphne was the pretty girl who was always being snatched by the mummy or the vampire or the ghost. And Scooby-Doo and his human friend Shaggy would cower in the corner and then eat everything in sight. Then, in the final scene, they would catch the ghost or whatever it was, unmask the evildoer, and he would turn out to be one of the characters they'd been dealing with all along. They would then explain to the grateful detectives whatever elaborate scheme the bad guy, and it usually was a guy, had concocted. And at this point, the bad guy would say, well, you know what he'd say.
Might have gotten away with it, too. It wasn't for these blasted kids and their dog.
We would have succeeded if it weren't for you meddling kids.
If it weren't for you interloping adolescents.
That's meddling kids.
And that gluttonous mutt.
It was kind of comforting. You always knew how the show would end. And once the show moved to ABC, you even knew what would come next.
As your body grows bigger,
your mind must flower.
It's great to learn,
cause knowledge is power.
It's Schoolhouse Rocky, the chip off the block of your favorite Schoolhouse Rock.
If you were a kid in the 70s or 80s, you might have learned about conjunctions, adverbs, even the Constitution, not from school, but from a series of cartoons on TV. Today, the story of Schoolhouse Rock. Later, we'll speak with the man who wrote those catchy tunes, but let's begin our trip down memory lane with our Soundcheck bullpen correspondent, Faith Saley. Faith, welcome back.
Hi, I was a child of the 70s.
So
Conjunction.
What's your function?
Right.
You write in your blog post on our website, soundcheck.org, that you don't remember watching Saturday morning cartoons, but you do remember watching Schoolhouse Rock.
Yeah, I can't name a cartoon that I would sit down to watch, but somehow I remember so many Schoolhouse Rocks and can sing. I mean, I don't know. Were you a kid of the 70s? Do you remember this?
I had younger brothers and sisters, I definitely heard it. Yeah.
So as soon, I mean, it was amazing because I started.
It was annoying is what it was.
Did
these
find,
things
see,
would
I
get
didn't
stuck
find,
in
yes,
your head.
Yes, like lolly, 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 get your adverbs here. And the preamble to the Constitution.
Yeah.
But I loved Schoolhouse Rock.
Well, see, I was a young teenager.
Oh,
I was very much
cool
feeling my 13 or 14-year-old, whatever
right,
it was.
Right.
It was like, but yeah, so basically these were kind of stuck in between your Saturday morning cartoons.
Yeah, they were like, you know, instead of commercials, they were the fun stuff. I don't have a memory of feeling like I was being taught. They didn't feel like lessons,
mm-hmm.
which is probably what they were after. You know, it was like spinach wrapped up in peanut butter.
Right. So it was a little surreptitious education,
yeah.
A little subversive education going on with this Schoolhouse Rock thing. Now, when you, on your Facebook page, posted about Schoolhouse
yeah.
Rock, you got like all kinds of
instantly.
Response.
It was so much fun, John. I put out there, you know, what are your memories? Anybody have any memories of Schoolhouse Rock? Any stories, you know, that even pertain to today? Instantly. I mean, within 5 minutes, there were so many responses and heartfelt memories, fun memories. And what really struck me is, first of all, how much of a part it played in virtually everyone's childhood, who is my peer. But how many people, we're all parents now, basically, how many people are actively trying to get their kids interested in Schoolhouse Rock. And a few of my Facebook friends are teachers who had been playing it for their classes.
Well, since you posted your story on the Soundcheck blog, we've been getting a whole bunch of
comments and calls. And Alex has called in to tell us what she knows and remembers about Schoolhouse Rock. Hi, Alex.
Hi, John.
So you were a child of the 70s and or 80s?
Yeah, I was born in the 80s and went to school in the 90s, and I think I was one of those kids who saw it actually in the classroom.
Really? So not a Saturday morning cartoon thing. So what do you remember about Schoolhouse Rock?
I think I remember a lot of the things that you've talked about, and it was you almost learned them through osmosis. I still remember, you know, like the whole preamble to the Constitution.
Me too, Alex.
That is lodged somewhere in my brain that is never going to leave.
Now, that's a stroke of genius, to be able to take the somewhat stilted-sounding English of 18th century America and phrase it musically in a way that kids will remember.
I think that there's something about putting long lists of text to song at that age, too, that you just, like, kids at that point are just going to remember it.
Yeah.
I remember so many things like that that are just sets of music and are etched on my brain forever.
Alex, can you sing the preamble to the Constitution?
Oh, man, I was really
I'll do it with you.
Me to do this.
Ready,
okay,
Alex?
Ready?
We the people, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare,
and secure the blessings of liberty. To ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this
United States of. I'll let you finish it out.
Well, that's Alex on the line with us. Alex, where are you calling from, by the way?
I actually now live and work in Washington, D.C.
Oh, so maybe
the preamble stuck with me.
So are you involved in politics somehow?
Yeah, I am. I work for an advocacy nonprofit, so we try to we're making bills into laws, I guess, as part of if to take a Schoolhouse Rock lesson.
So, Alex, I just watched I'm Just a Bill recently, and it's really depressing. I had forgotten he's so sad and downtrodden. He even says something
the bill is in the cartoon.
His like posture's all crumpled, and the little kid keeps reminding him how hard it's going to be, and then you see him, you know, theoretically make his way, and then he reminds you that the president can veto him. It was really depressing.
The president can veto him, and then he'll die. That means that he will die.
Wow,
it is depressing.
All right, well, you know, they weren't sugarcoating anything, I guess. Alex, thanks very much for calling in.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
We're speaking with Faith Saley about remembering Schoolhouse Rock, a series of animated songs that aimed to teach kids without saying, hey, we're going to teach you now. But as you've found, they not only stick with people, but looking back on them now, 40 years later, how do they look?
To me, they look and sound totally dated. But because they hearken back to my childhood, I love it. Like, that's not a criticism coming from me. But the music is so, it's either super funky or trippy. That woman blossomed, remember, unpack your adjectives. That lady.
Blossom Dearie, yes.
It was a scary bear. That lady. Or really folksy, like the preamble.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I one of my favorites was Suffrin' Till Suffrage, and the groovy 70s lady, she has this kind of mullet ponytail going on, and she's got these white go-go boots with massive bell bottoms and this belly shirt. And my favorite part is she's clearly supposed to be really hip, but they don't show her navel.
Uh-huh.
So she's got this belly, you know, so women's lib was okay, but belly buttons weren't.
So that was a bridge too far,
right,
showing
right,
the navel
right.
to kids.
They couldn't push it that far.
They could not vote. Even Betsy Ross, who showed the flag, was left behind that first election day.
Oh, shame, sisters!
Then Susan B., Anthony,
yeah,
and Julia Howe,
Lucretia
Mott,
and others.
They showed us how they carried signs and marched in lines until it long last the law was passed.
Oh, we were suffering until suffrage.
Not a woman who could vote no matter what age. Then the 19th Amendment struck down that restrictive rule.
But, you know, there was Verve, That's What's Happening. That was a black superhero. And Mr. Morton, I remember, it was kind of self- consciously progressive in the same way that maybe Free to Be You and Me was. Mm. Because in the song Mr. Morton, the woman Pearl proposes to him.
Right.
And I remember in the Constitution, they stamped it with right on the Constitution.
And Mr. Morton, that was another one that was, you know, for most of the song, it's just you feel terrible for this guy. I mean, you're learning about subjects and predicates from a guy who's like totally lonely and doesn't know what to
and
do about the girl
and only
next
has a cat
door.
And flowers. Yeah. I know.
Well, we'll talk a little more about Mr. Morton later on. But we're talking about Schoolhouse Rock, which has stayed with a whole generation. And as we heard from Alex, a second generation that didn't even grow up watching them originally on TV. Do these still have a place in society today?
I hope so. I mean, there's nothing, there may be songs today that are catchier, the whole, is it Alan Menken who does all the great Disney stuff now? Those songs may be catchier for today's kids, but there's nobody composing these kind of lessons. And it's like what Alex said, or what you said, taking long text and making it something memorable is quite a challenge. The other day, I was bathing my son. He's 8 months old, and I had Pandora on. And sometimes Pandora throws you for a loop. Like, it will go from Little Mermaid to Lynyrd Skynyrd on this channel I have, truly. But Schoolhouse Rock came on, and I was singing the preamble at the top of my lungs, and he was getting excited because he saw how happy I was.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, yeah, I really want him to grow up hearing that No More Kings and The Power of Three.
And we should at this point probably mention, since I haven't mentioned his name yet, Bob Dureau, with whom we will be speaking shortly, the man who composed all of these songs that you just can't get out of your head, many of them anyway. Kimberly is joining us on the line, and Kimberly is a teacher in Georgia. Kimberly, I just asked Faith what place these old Schoolhouse Rock things have in society today. Do they have a place in the classroom?
Oh, they definitely do. I have been teaching, well, ever since I graduated from college, off and on, substituting, but I have been at the same school now for my sixth year. I taught fifth grade for 5 years and sought out the Schoolhouse Rock DVD in the library on a yearly basis. And then this year I've moved up to middle school and I'm teaching English in middle school. And just recently we were talking about conjunctions and interjections and a light bulb went off in my head and I was like, I've got to go get that Schoolhouse Rock grammar song. And sure enough, I played both of those songs and, you know, since they're sixth and seventh graders, some of the seventh graders, you know, are kind of to the point where they're too cool for school.
Yeah.
But, but then I've got some others that are just fun-loving, and they knew them too, and they just belted them out. And I have no idea how they knew them, because they certainly were not growing up in the 70s and 80s watching them on Saturday mornings like I was. But they knew them, and they started singing along, so it was great.
So, Kimberly, you played Conjunction Junction, which is one of the better nuts, Conjunction Junction, What's Your Function, the one that we were talking about earlier. And then the other one was which? Interjections?
The interjections. Interjections, so excitement or emotion. You know that one?
Yep. Know it. We have it standing by. Kimberly, thanks very much for calling in. Let's hear some of Interjections.
With one small injection, while Reginald uttered some interjections.
Hey, that's smart! Ouch, that hurts! Yeah, that's not fair, giving a guy a shot down there!
Interjections,
hey,
excitement,
yeah!
Emotion.
Ouch!
They're generally set apart from a sentence by an exclamation.
Interjections.
Okay, do you want a sign of the times?
Yeah.
I am doing fertility shots every morning that my husband has to give to me, and I am thinking about that. Could you see the doctor
Ouch!
Give him a shot in his butt? And, you know, my interjections are not quite ouch.
Faith Saley is with us, remembering Schoolhouse Rock, and you can read her blog post on our website, soundcheck.org. You refer to these Schoolhouse Rock animated lessons as educational mac and cheese.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
They're just, I think they're like comfort food when you hear them. Even if they weren't educational, when you hear stuff from your child, I mean, if I hear the Brady Bunch theme song, I sing along, right? Because it's just, it's comfortable. It's what you know.
Right.
But there was something about when it came on and I was with my son and it was effortless. It was almost like when I go to church and I hear the prayers I used to know as a kid. I don't think about the words. Your lips right. start moving. And that's why I felt like educational mac and cheese is just in your system. You've absorbed it and it's nice.
People love talking about Schoolhouse Rock. Back to the phones. Sima is joining us. Sima, where are you calling in from?
Hi, I'm from Rockville Center, New York.
On Long Island. Welcome to Soundcheck.
On Long Island.
So,
thank you.
You have fond memories of Schoolhouse Rock?
Oh, yeah. Not just that it's stuck in my head, I'm listening to your show and giggling at the image of grown-ups singing the preamble to the Constitution, because when I was in law school, we did that in my con law class, because it was a total generational thing. And then when you were playing interjections just now, I had dinner with a girlfriend whose son and mine are the same age. They're both 8. And we were sitting at the table singing Schoolhouse Rock and saying how much we love sharing this with our little guys. It's a tremendous tool, and I think it paved the way for things like They Might Be Giants doing their Here Come the Science and Here Come the ABCs and Here Come the Math,
right.
You know, where they're sort of singing their lessons. So I think it's got more nutritional value than mac and cheese. it may be more like organic mac and cheese. You know, it's something that comes so fully into kids. And even now my 8-year-old sings Unpack Your Adjectives.
How does he know that song? From you singing it to him? Or do you actually have like an LP? Or do you have the CD of the covers from the mid-90s?
No, we have the actual Best of Schoolhouse Rock CD. I'm holding it in my hand. And a couple of weeks of immersion in that kind of language and that kind of music really got the lessons in him. I'm starting to use the math with him now because they're doing multiplication. So it's fun for me to be able to say, you know, oh, good 11 or figure 8 and be able to kind of throw out, you know, 3 is a magic number.
Right.
and have that commonality of language with him, because that's how I learned it.
All right.
Whatever,
it's a great mnemonic device. Sima, thanks very much for calling in.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
We're talking about Schoolhouse Rock. My guest is Faith Saley, a correspondent for CBS Sunday Morning and a regular member of the Soundcheck Bullpen. Read her blog on soundcheck.org. And let's go right back to the phones. Jason is calling in as well. Jason, where are you based?
I'm actually in Dallas, Texas.
In Dallas. And are you a child of the 70s or 80s?
Absolutely. I was born in 71. So by the time I was paying attention and watching these things, Schoolhouse Rock would have been in its second or third years. You had all these different topics being covered, you know, the grammar and the, you know, civics lessons and so forth.
Right. So some of the early ones were pretty basic, just like 3 is the three is a magic number,
oh my God.
Figure 8.
Oh, you mentioned Figure 8. Figure 8 is an amazing song. And if you go and listen to it now, I don't know how it belongs on a children's list, because Figure 8 makes me want to plunge myself into cold water. It is that song, which is written, you know, in a minor key, and it has this mournful cello, and it has Blossom Deary, who Faith Saley mentioned earlier, is singing. That song just speaks of potentiality lost. I mean, it's, you know, it's all about infinity, right? It keeps mentioning
right.
infinity. But, you know, it's talking about how you need to be able to skate in this form of infinity, but it's dangerous. You're going to fall through the ice. And then it, like, grooves up for a second. You know, it gets exciting. And suddenly she's excited about the different permutations of 8. And then it just gets cold and minor again. And it's like all that hope and all that minor happiness has just been ripped away onto the ice again. I think it's a terrifying and haunting song, and I listen to it all the time, actually.
That's actually a great introduction. Now we have to hear some of the song. Jason, thanks so much for calling in. Here's a little bit of Figure 8.
Figure 8 is double 4. Figure 4 is half of 8. If you skate, you would be great. It's a circle that turns round upon itself. 1 times 8. times four is two times eight. If you skate upon thin ice, you'd be wise if you thought twice before you made another single move. One times eight is eight, two times eight is 16, three times eight is 24, four times eight is 32, and five times eight is 40.
Just a little bit of figure eight, which gives Jason chills even now. I mean, the animation, if you remember, Faith, is the figure eight, you know, does fall through the ice.
Yes, and you see someone skating around it, right, and it finally plunges in. Yeah.
It is
a trippy tune.
Yeah. Well, you know, those were the days. I mean, you know, we're talking 40 years ago, 1973, that Schoolhouse Rock started. It went for a number of years. Did you ever fall out of love with Schoolhouse Rock, or has it been
not
like a constant?
Not consciously. I mean, you stop watching Saturday morning cartoons, and then it sort of went away, and I don't remember it kind of being in the ether in the late 80s.
Yeah.
But then
there was that covers record that was done in the mid-90s.
Yeah, yeah, but I missed that because, you know, I was in college.
Right.
But I have to rediscover that, clearly. I have to tell you, there was one little tale on Facebook. Someone said, I learned how to irritate my siblings by shuffling across the carpet and then touching their ears. That's electricity.
Well, we'll hear a little of electricity to wrap up this part of our show. But still to come, we'll speak with Bob Dereau, who wrote so many of the songs of Schoolhouse Rock, and one of the artists who took part in that covers album in 1996 called Schoolhouse Rock Rocks. But Faith Saley, always a pleasure to have you. What a great idea. Your blog post is on our website, soundcheck.org. We'll see you next time.
Electricity.
Where do you think it all comes from? This powerful
electricity.
Through high wires to here it comes. They're bringing the
electricity.
Every building must be wired to use it.
Electricity.
Power plants most all use fire to make it.
Electricity.
Burning fuel and using steam they generate.
Electricity.
So what about you? We want to hear how Schoolhouse Rock shaped your life. Are you still using lessons that you learned from it? Post a comment on soundcheck.org or call us at 866-939-1612. More Schoolhouse Rock in a moment. Here's what's happening on soundcheck.org tomorrow. Visit our site at 2 p.m. Eastern tomorrow to hear a live in-studio session from this band, the Revolutionary Snake Ensemble, a kind of stationary marching band. That's the Revolutionary Snake Ensemble live on soundcheck.org tomorrow at 2 p.m.
My hero, Zero, such a funny little hero. But until you came along, we counted on our fingers and toes. Now you're here to stay.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. From I'm Just a Bill to Three is a Magic Number, Schoolhouse Rock taught millions of kids about grammar, civics, math, without many of them even realizing they were being educated. Now, we've already heard from many of you who watched and learned from Schoolhouse Rock in the 70s and 80s. Now we're going to hear from the man who wrote so many of those catchy tunes, Bob Dereau, who recently celebrated his 89th birthday, and the show is celebrating its 40th birthday. Bob, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you very much, John. Wow.
Wow, indeed. I mean, you'd performed at the Kennedy Center for this kind of 40th anniversary Schoolhouse Rock thing.
Yeah.
What do you make of all of this love for, you know, something that began on a whim 40 years ago?
Whoever thought it would last 40 years or even a season? Well, we didn't even know we'd be on television when it started.
So how did it, what was your initial brief when they first asked you to do this?
Well, this gentleman who had a lot of money and a good idea said his sons couldn't memorize their times tables, and so he'd like me to put the multiplication tables to music. That's mm-hmm. how it started. I wrote all of those songs. It was called Multiplication Rock. First, we made an album, and, mm-hmm. you know, it was only meant to be something for libraries and schools and affluent parents for their children. But the animator went to work drawing little doodles, and suddenly they sold it to ABC Television, and suddenly we were on TV. So I became the musical director, and we eventually hired many more voices and songwriters mm-hmm. as time went by, and we went into four subjects in 13 years from 1973 to 1985.
Right. So that first premiere, January 13th, 1973, the premiere of Schoolhouse Rock. Now, first of all, the idea of teaching your kid the multiplication table by setting it to music, that was pretty progressive thinking for 1973.
I think it was. On the surface, it was a rather simple idea. When he presented it to me, I said, uh-huh, okay. And then he said, but don't write down. Apparently, he'd been searching for the right guy, and some of them would write, you know, mere dribble-drabble, simple rhythms, simple rhymes. So I took it as another challenge mm-hmm. to my sensibilities, and I went home and thought about 2 or 3 weeks before I wrote the first song, which I brought in a demo form, mm-hmm. and they snapped it up. It was called Three is a Magic Number.
And what did that demo version sound like?
Well, you know, the idea I thought was, never mind multiplying by three, that's easy, but how about three? You know, all the trinities we get. So I tried to work in all those trinities, like the heart, the brain, the body, the faith, hope, and charity, the present, the future, all those trinities. It went something like this. Three is a magic number. Yes, it is. It's a magic number. Somewhere in the ancient mystic trinity, you get three as a magic number. Well, it takes three legs to make a tripod or to make a table stand. It takes three wheels to make a vehicle called a tricycle. Every triangle has three corners. Every triangle has three sides, no more, no less. You don't have to guess. When it's three, you can see it's a magic number.
Bob Duro at our piano here in the Soundcheck studio. Megan from Brooklyn writes on our website, I still use the Threes song whenever I need to sort anything by threes. I mean, there's a whole generation of Americans.
That's wild. I never heard that one.
But there's a whole generation that grew up on these songs that they would just kind of consume unwittingly between the bigger cartoons. You know, after Scooby-Doo ended, there was a little history lesson or a little grammar lesson. And it began with the numbers, though, right?
Yes, they were the first series.
Yeah. And even there, with you, you know, just kind of doing a little demo version of the song, we can hear your jazz background. I mean, you didn't come out of nowhere, right? You'd worked with Miles Davis.
One of my friends said, you didn't write Schoolhouse Rock, you wrote Schoolhouse Jazz.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, I used to hire my pals in the jazz world to play the tracks, and so there was all kinds of extra flavors. And it swung, man. It swang.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons that so many people still feel so kind of connected to these songs is you didn't write down to kids.
I didn't.
So was that, I mean, that was your choice. That wasn't like the network saying, you know, write up, not down. That
was, well, his name was David B. McCall. He was in an ad agency, and he actually did say, don't write down, because mm-hmm. he'd already tried to buy some songs from other guys. and they hadn't worked out, so he gave me that warning, and I took it and ran with it.
Right.
You know, like the triangle, I mean, how important is that? You know, I was thinking of Buckminster Fuller and big ideas.
The Buckyballs.
All that.
So you mentioned David McCall. Now, another name that comes into the story is Michael Eisner. That Michael Eisner, the Disney Michael Eisner.
Yes.
Who back in the day, he was at the network at ABC.
He was in charge of children's programming when they sold it to him.
And so he was the one who actually took what was supposed to be a kind of little recording project and put it on network TV.
He did. Well, he consulted with a gentleman named Chuck Jones, who's quite famous in animation.
The animator, yeah.
He happened to be next door in the studio, and he said, come in and dig this, Chuck. You know, he had heard it once. He said, played it again for Chuck Jones, and Mr. Jones said, should I buy it? And he said, yes, buy it, but only if he draws it. And he pointed to our chief of animation, the late Tom Yohe, Y-O-H-E, Yohe, a real genius.
Faith Saley earlier in the show was saying how, looking back at the animation now, she finds it dated, but in a good way. You know, not in a pejorative sense, but it looks like the time where the songs were written and the animation was drawn. We've also heard from a bunch of our listeners so far, and Heather is calling in from Georgia. Hi, Heather. You're on the air with Bob Durow on Soundcheck.
Hi, Heather.
Hi, how are you?
She's there.
Yes. So, Heather, what was your experience with Schoolhouse Rock?
Well, first of all, I've always loved Schoolhouse Rock, just like everyone, I think, who grew up in the 70s. But I actually got in a trivia game and ended up getting a question right because I remembered my Schoolhouse Rock. They asked who invented the sewing machine, and I think I answered just like they do on the show, and I said, Elias Howe. And I got it right.
I think Blossom Dearie delivered that line.
She sang a number of your songs, didn't she?
Yes, she was one of my pals. And actually, Mr. Yohe, the animator, said, I think we want a little girl, not a little girl, but someone that sounds like a little girl to sing.
For folks who don't aren't aware of her, jazz singer who spoke kind of like, it almost sounded put on, but that was her real voice.
It was her real voice, her real name and everything.
Let's hear a little bit of the song that that enabled Heather to get her Trivial Pursuit question correct. This is Mother Necessity from Schoolhouse Rock.
Mother Necessity, help us to see.
Now the mother of Samuel Morse always sent the lad out on a horse.
Take a message to Miss Peavy on the far side of the pike. Spread the word about the quilting bee next Saturday night.
Little Samuel started thinking of a way to send a message, though he'd never met a horse he didn't like.
Mother Necessity.
Elias, can you help me with my sewing?
Mother dear, I'll fulfill your fondest wishes.
Elias, how?
This machine I've made will keep your sewing really flowing. In fact, we'll keep the whole nation in stitches.
Mother Necessity from Schoolhouse Rock. Bob Durow, the composer and writer, one of the creators of the series back in the 70s, with me here in the studio. Heather from Georgia with us on the line. So that's the song. What did you end up winning, by the way, for knowing Elias Howe?
I think just that I was better than my friends. I don't think there was much writing on it.
Okay. Do you have kids, Heather?
Yes, I do. I have two sons.
And do they have any knowledge of Schoolhouse Rock? Do you ever use any of the songs with them?
Oh, absolutely. When I found out you could buy them on DVD, I went out and got them, ostensibly for my children, but really so I could relive them. And I did, but it did turn out, I think, hearing things sung, especially with the parts of speech when they were having to learn them, hearing it sung like that was just a reinforcement of what they were learning in school, and I think it really helped, personally.
Right. Well, Heather, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. Heather calling in from Georgia.
Thank you, Heather.
Bob, that song, Mother Necessity, that's a little bit different from a lot of the songs where it might just be you singing or Blossom Dearie singing. There's like voice after voice. That must have been a nightmare to put together.
Well, it was a nightmare production, yeah, but very exciting to me. Actually, Tom Yohe helped me write that. I mean, he wrote some of the words, and mm-hmm. I think he did the research necessary to doing that. And we decided we'd use all of our voices. There was Blossom and me and Esra Mohawk and the great Jack Sheldon, who sang on many songs.
Mm-hmm. And, now, when you moved from the early math songs to things like history and parts of speech, you know, grammar and stuff, are those harder? I mean, let's take a song like Verb, That's what's Happening. Is that a harder song to do than Three is a Magic Number?
Absolutely, yes.
Why?
Well, when we got into grammar, you know, we were all buying grammar books and discovering that there aren't really any rules. You just have to sort of wing your way. So, you know, we were all studying grammar, and by that time we had a staff of writers. It wasn't just me. It was the great Lynn Ahrens.
Mm-hmm.
She wrote the very first grammar song that was animated, and it was called A Noun is a Person, Place, or Thing. She's a beautiful songwriter, and I have to give her a lot of credit.
Mm-hmm. Went on to do several successful Broadway plays.
I think she's written nearly as many as I have in this whole series.
Mm-hmm.
The problems. Also, we picked up much more direction after multiplication. Mm-hmm. I had a free hand with multiplication because we weren't on television. Nobody knew what I was doing. I wrote songs about 0 and 12 based on the duodecimal system that I thought they wouldn't buy, but they finally did. So, you know, I had a great time just having my own way. After that, it became more of the network is coming in, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They have their standards and practices they have to fulfill and all that.
We're speaking with Bob Durow, the composer, singer, pianist, about the 40th anniversary of Schoolhouse Rock. It has remarkable staying power. So, Bob, do you just celebrated your 89th birthday. You look great. You sound great. I'll ask this about both the TV show and about you personally. How do you what's the secret, you know, to the staying power, the longevity?
Well, you know, if you hang in there long enough, you'll get your just desserts. I guess that's it. Or maybe I'm trying to outlive Schoolhouse Rock. I don't know.
So the songs, you know, they were pretty short, but you had to, I mean, now, you know, marketing people use the word sticky. You know, you had to have a hook. Even, you know, we were hearing the preamble earlier in the show, and, you know, I was saying that to set such a wordy clump of text to music and get kids to actually remember it, you know, that there's a real kind of gift. There's a talent there that I think maybe people don't recognize, even if they're kind of feeling it, you know, inside.
Yes, well, I was kind of famous for having made a lot of songs out of ordinary scraps of paper, information, you know, and I once sang a beer bottle. I was a can, actually. Carling Black Label for an ad.
Uh-huh.
I did a couple of TV ads trying to make a living before I met the Schoolhouse Rock people.
Mm-hmm.
But it's true. It's like, you know, and you spoke of the 3 minutes. Once we were on television, every song had to be 3 minutes, no more, no less.
Mm.
That's the way television is. They count every second. So that was another problem I dealt with.
Yeah. So what about another of the famous Schoolhouse Rock songs, Conjunction Junction? How did that song come about?
Well, I must admit that my executive director, the great George Newell, he's still alive and he wrote some of the songs in the series, but he gave me that title.
Mm-hmm.
We're struggling with grammar, and he said, how about, you know, those little words, conjunctions, how about Conjunction Junction? And I said, oh, nice. And I went right home and wrote it. And I wrote it all by myself, although his title certainly helped.
Mm-hmm.
And the animation became a railroad theme. So, of course, that was genius on Tom Yowie's part. You have these boxcars with and, but, and are. And, of course, this song was sung by, I mentioned him before, Jack Sheldon, one of the great singers, a wonderful musician, trumpet player, jazz man.
Now, do you sing it?
I can sing it. Conjunction, junction. What's your function? I usually make the audience sing it with me. Conjunction, junction, what's your function? Hooking up words and phrases and clauses. Conjunction, junction, how's that function? I got three favorite cars that get most of my job done. Conjunction, junction, what's their function? I got and button R, that'll get you pretty far. Dig this, and, that's an additive like this and that. And then there's but, when you say, Mommy, I won't do this, but I will do that. And then there's R, when you have a choice, this or that. And button R, that'll get you pretty far. Sing it, baby.
Conjunction, junction, what's your fun?
I sort of jazz it up in my later life.
yeah, you do. So, I mean, you've been, you pre-Schoolhouse Rock up to now, you've been a jazz singer, a jazz pianist, a composer, Blue Xmas with Miles Davis, so many others. Do you find when you're in the middle of one of your sets that people are requesting Free is a Magic Number, Conjunction, Junction, Zero My Hero?
Absolutely.
And do it you play them?
It started out in my nightclub days, you know, after it had been on television about 10 years. The kids have grown up. They're waiting tables in jazz bars. And I'm singing, better than cream cheese and bagels, better than... And they said, your voice, I like that song. Your voice sounds kind of familiar. Did you ever do any of that? Yeah, that was me. Oh, can we have one? So pretty soon me and the waiters are doing Three is a Magic Number and Conjunction Junction.
Would you actually bring the waiters, like, over to the piano with you?
And... Well, yeah, I said, you can help me sing it, you know.
Wow.
All they do is sing Conjunction Junction. What's your function?
So you had this big thing at the Kennedy Center down in Washington, D.C. to celebrate 40th anniversary of Schoolhouse Rock. How'd that go?
That came up suddenly, and I went down there on the train and sang one set and came back home. Mm-hmm. But it was exciting. I mean, they admitted they had never had a crowd like that. It was a weekly children's show that they give at the Millennium mm-hmm. Stage. And every week they get, you know, 400 or 500 people. They had 2,000 this time.
Wow.
And mostly parents with
children.
I was
just going to say kids of all ages, probably.
Kids of all ages, yeah.
Bob Durow has been with us on Soundcheck. He is the composer of so many of the songs of Schoolhouse Rock, which premiered in January of 1973, ran on ABC through 1985, came back briefly in the 90s, and now lives forever online and in the hearts of a whole generation of Americans, as we're hearing on Soundcheck today. Bob, thank you so much for coming in, playing for us, and talking with us.
Thank you, John. Well, you know, it's all manna to my soul when I meet all these young people who say, you know, you saved my life, or I couldn't have got through school without you.
Well, we're hearing from a lot of them today. This is Soundcheck.
Got a lot of lobby, Johnny Edwards here. Anything you need, and we can make it absolutely clear. Is a word.
That's all it is, and there's a lot of them.
That modifies a verb.
Sometimes a verb, sometimes.
It modifies an adjective, or else another adverb. And so you see, that is positively very, very necessary. Lobby, 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 get your adverbs here. Father, son, and lobby selling adverbs here. Got a lot of adverbs, and we make it clear. So come to lobby.
Hello, folks. This is Lolly Sr. saying we have every adverb in the book, so come on down and look.
Hello, folks. Lolly Jr. here. Suppose your house needs painting. How are you going to paint it? That's where the adverb comes in. We can also give you a special intensifier so you can paint it very neatly or rather sloppily.
Ah! Hi. Suppose you're going nut gathering. Your buddy wants to know where and when. Use an adverb and tell him.
Get your adverb. Use it with an adjective. It says much more. Anything described can be described some more. Anything you'd ever need is in the store. And so you choose very carefully every word you use.
Coming up, we'll hear from one of the artists who appeared on that compilation of Schoolhouse Rock covers. The rapper Ski-Lo joins us to talk about interpreting the work of this cartoon favorite. And stay tuned for our next Soundcheck Challenge. We're going to ask you to get presidential. later on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. More now on the musical cartoon series known as Schoolhouse Rock. In 1996, it was the subject of some pretty inventive cover versions on an album called Schoolhouse Rock Rocks. The rapper Ski Lo was part of it. He made radio waves in 1995 with this song, I Wish, and then made TV waves this past Sunday when it was used by Toyota in their Super Bowl ad campaign. Cause it's hard to survive when you're living in a concrete jungle and these girls keep passing me by. She looks fly, she looks fly. Ski Lo's latest release came out in November. It's called Fresh Ideas. But he's here to talk with us today about his connection to Schoolhouse Rock. Ski Lo, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hey, thank you. How's it going?
Good. So did you grow up with Schoolhouse Rock?
I sure did. I'm actually born in Chicago, Illinois, and it's 1975. So I grew up with Schoolhouse Rock, and I know every song on that catalog, and they're some of my favorites.
So when it came time to record the Schoolhouse Rock Rocks record, did you get to pick the song, or were they kind of assigning them? How did that work?
Actually, yeah, I did get to pick. There were a few already gone by the time it got to me, like Three the Magic Numbers gone. And I always like a challenge, so I try to pick something either most difficult or something you think could not be turned into, you know, something current. And I chose Mr. Morton.
Mr. Morton walked down the street. Mr. Morton walked. Mr. Morton talked to his cat. Mr. Morton talked. Hello, cat. You look good. Mr. Morton was lonely. Mr. Morton was. Mr. Morton is the subject of the sentence, and what the predicate says he does.
When I got the project and I was playing the record back, I was trying to figure out how am I going to turn this into a rap. You know, when I first got it, because they're singing and I rap. So it was a real challenge to, you know, make it a rap song. And then it was so melancholy, you know, so it was like really difficult to try to, you know, turn that piece around. But right. I always liked the piece. I like the melancholy feel as it is.
Yeah, and it does, of course, have a happy ending as Mr. Morton gets the girl, or the girl gets him.
Yeah.
So Pearl ends up proposing to him. Here's a little bit of Ski Lo's version of the tale of Mr. Morton from the album Schoolhouse Rock Rocks.
See, Mr. Morton is the subject of my sentence, and what the predicate says he does. Mr. Morton walks, Mr. Morton talks, Mr. Morton reads, Mr. Morton loves. The subject is a noun, that's a person, place or thing, it's who or what the sentence is about. And then the predicate's a verb, that's an action word that gets the subject like up and out. Mr. Morton wrote Pearl a poem.
Say what?
Yeah, Mr. Morton wrote. Pearl replied in the afternoon.
How she replied?
She replied by no. Mr. Morton was very nervous. Yeah, Mr. Morton was. And Mr. Morton is the subject of my sentence, and what the predicate says he does. The cat stretched, the sun beat down, a neighbor had chased his kid. And each sentence is completed, but only when you know exactly what the subject did. See, Mr. Morton is the subject of my sentence, and what the predicate says he does. Mr. Morton is the subject of my sentence.
The tale of Mr. Morton, originally from Schoolhouse Rock, and this version by my guest Ski Lo, the rapper who was part of the 1996 album called Schoolhouse Rock Rocks. Ski Lo, have you used any of the lessons that you learned growing up with Schoolhouse Rock in your everyday life?
Actually, yeah. One of my favorite was on government. I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I won't be a law until. That's one of my favorites. And I still sing these songs, you know, they're forever.
Now, you have a couple of kids, right?
Yeah, two girls.
And do you play these songs or sing these songs to them? Do they have any knowledge of this?
Oh, yeah, they watch Schoolhouse Rock all the time. And my youngest, especially, she still comes home from school, pops in her Schoolhouse Rock tape, and watch all the videos.
All right, so those songs are still around. They're on video, and the kids are using them. And we've been speaking with Skee-Lo, whose version of The Tale of Mr. Morton was, I have to say, my favorite track off of Schoolhouse Rock Rocks when that came out back in 96. Skee-Lo, thanks so much for talking with us today.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
And you can find more personal stories from other artists who covered Schoolhouse Rock, including the band Better Than Ezra and this band, Man or Astro Man, on our website, soundcheck.org. They recorded a version of this song, Interplanet Janet. Brian Causey, better known by his stage name Star Crunch, told us, quote, "Saturday mornings was the only real time a kid could feel completely connected to the world. Those songs were our lifeblood." Here's Man or Astro Man's version of Interplanet Janet. That's Man or Astro Man and their version of Interplanet Janet from the album Schoolhouse Rock Rocks. Before we go tonight, I've been asked by Soundcheck executive producer Joel Meyer for a few minutes of airtime, and he's also requested that his walk-in music be played. So Irene, I guess just press the button. Really, Joel? Hail to the chief. You get bumped from senior producer to executive producer. And
John, it's not just my theme song. It is also the theme song of the President of the United States, for
yes,
your information.
Yes, I am aware of that.
Well, and we've got a big event coming up here in this country. The State of the Union Address is going to be on this Tuesday. And a patriotic show like Soundcheck is not going to be left behind. We're going to do a warm-up special for the State of the Union here on WNYC. We're calling it the State of American Music. A warm-up special, John. A sound check first.
Well, I mean, you know, having talked about Schoolhouse Rock and stuff, I guess it's...
That's right. I mean, that's how I learned about government, from songs like I'm Just a Bill. So we're going to do something a little bit different. Now, President Obama at about 9 o'clock Eastern is going to be talking a lot about government and politics and things like that. We want to talk about the state of American music. It's kind of a vague idea, John. I mean, in this global economy, is there really such a thing as American music? Well, we're gonna try and nail it down. We'll have some special guests, and then we also have a challenge for you, the Soundcheck listener.
And what is that challenge?
Okay, John, I don't know if you've ever seen the State of the Union
address. No, I have never seen a State of the Union address.
Okay, here's what happens in almost every State of the Union address. It's a presidential tradition. You say, the State of the Union is blank. Often you say, the State of our Union is blank. Okay, so I've assembled some examples. Here's President Barack Obama last year.
Our journey goes forward, and the state of our union is strong. Thank you. God bless you. And may God bless the United States of America.
Okay, so there you go. The state of our union is strong. Strong is a very common word. Other words have been used. Here's President George W. Bush in 2002. This was a big State of the Union address. 9/11, just a few months in the rearview mirror, and this was a very important moment for the president. Here's what President Bush said.
Our economy is in recession, and the civilized world faces unprecedented dangers. Yet the state of our union has never been stronger.
Okay, pretty bold, an important time, an important speech, never been stronger. Very interesting take on this whole tradition. Now let's take you back, John, to Gerald Ford in 1977. This is Gerald Ford's last State of the Union address.
I can report that the State of the Union is good. There is room for improvement as always. But today we have a more perfect union than when my stewardship began.
All right.
Very, very Gerald Ford.
Good. The State of the Union is good.
And I don't know if room for improvement has ever been used in a State of the Union address since then. Well, we're going to take the same approach at looking at the state of American music, and we're going to assign some tasks to you. You can go to our website at soundcheck.org, and you can post your answers to these challenges. We want to know, how would you complete the phrase, the state of American music is blank?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we're going to be talking about this next Tuesday night, but we want you to go to our website, soundcheck.org, right now. Give us your word to complete that phrase, the state of American music is blank. Then, we want you to announce a new policy initiative for American music. That's what American presidents do at the State of the Union. They
right.
talk about things that they're going to do. We want you to announce one new strategic initiative for American music to make it better, to make it strong. And finally, presidents invite special guests to sit in the balcony and they point them out, right? We want to know, whom will you invite?
Okay, so three questions. Complete the phrase, the state of American music is blank. What is your new initiative, the plank on your platform to bring American music into the future, and who's the special guest you will point to in the balcony? We're doing this at a special time.
That's right. So normally Soundcheck airs at 9 o'clock at night, a very special time because, well, the president's going to be talking at 9 o'clock at night. So tune in to the State of American Music Tuesday, February 12th at 8 p.m.
And if you're outside New York, tune in live online at WNYC.org.
Oh, my mama's got a battle last week. Fell for the widow from across the street. She kicked him in the air and she told him what's what. But he couldn't keep his mind off her honey. Put your silly old man with his teeth are gone. Poking his nose where it don't belong. She's a rose, all right, but she's got thorns.
Tomorrow on the show, we have a live performance by the English-born and now L.A.-based singer, songwriter, and guitarist extraordinaire Richard Thompson. His new album's called Electric, but he will play for us acoustic. Also, a preview of Sunday's Grammy ceremony. That's tomorrow night at 9. Till then, find us online at soundcheck.org. I'm John Schaefer.